Good evening, everybody. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday night. And this is what we do.
And here we are.
You know, it's an interesting thing because in the middle of the holidays, a lot of people are traveling, and there are very few people on, you know, that are on the chat. But, and I started thinking a few weeks ago, I thought, and Pat and I talked about it, you know, maybe we shouldn't do it. Maybe it's run its course. And I realized that the external for me is that I want to have an external response. Like, there's 22 people on the chat. And
right.
we had that when we were doing certain parts of the ABD and things
yes.
like that. And now there aren't. There's 4 or 5, I think. And the point of it is that I realized in the reflection that it's, why am I doing this,
mm-hmm.
is a different process altogether. In a sense, I'm doing it because it needs to be done. And some of the material that we're covering, that Pat and I am covering, and Jan has helped many, many times, and we always get, except on special evenings, we get some remarkable feedback from our vet. And Ivan joins us from time to time. And the point of it is that we're creating an exposition of this material. We are looking at the material. I happen to be an accountant. I'm a consultant for financial matters. And sometimes a new client that I get it's a good business, it's a solid business, but the business owners have never really looked at their financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, well, gosh, maybe I should take a course in accounting, or I should learn this or that. I say, no. All I want you to do is actually look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually place your attention on the material, because it will start to speak back to you. Years ago when I was in New York putting on the Jazz Art Festival there,
right.
I met with a professor from Columbia University, and Linda was there at the time. We had this long conversation with the guy. And this might interest Tito a little bit too, is that I said to the professor, I said, I'm putting up all this art. And we got into a conversation that in a certain way the art isn't complete until the viewer views it. And then whatever it is this cycle is complete. There's a completion in it. A musician plays a remarkable piece in the middle of the forest, and there's no question there's a beauty to it, but until it's heard in a certain way, it's not complete. And so in a certain way, that's part of what I think we're doing here, Pat, is just allowing ourselves to place our attention on it for a moment to see what comes back to us.
Voicing. We're voicing.
We're giving voice to the material. And we've been doing it for a number of years now. We're going to keep doing it, so that's why I keep coming back on Wednesday nights. And I've missed a few, either traveling or that's about it.
Yeah.
And so what we're working on now is the American Book of the Dead guidebook. And we call it the ABD guidebook. And this was a text that was constructed right around the same time that the traditional red, hold that one up too, was put together. But it's a totally different slant, and E.J. Gold, the author, decided to take a different approach to transit travel. Last week we covered the eighth book of the dead. 2 weeks ago, the eighth book of the dead, called the book of Al-Aziz.
Al-Aziz.
And then naturally the next would be the ninth book. But in this case, the title of the book is the transitional book of the dead, called the book of Ul-Jabbar. Now, when I asked EJ about this, I said I was considering doing this book. He says, well, you know, when Rashad told me to do work with the 99 names of God, and that's what I did. And so he started working that material. And if you look and you study the lists and that people do on the 99 names of God, Al-Jabbar shows up as either number 9 or 10. And the difference is that some lists start with number 1 being Allah, and others, of course, don't mention that and start with number 1, or book 1.
No, I think 1 is Ula.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. That's
what. Thank you.
Ula.
Ula.
Yes. Ula, Allah.
And at first my brain started to speculate, well, why did he do that? And what's going on? What's he doing here? And thoughts come up about, oh, this has to do with the concept of the octave. And he's just pointing that out to us. And then I took a different approach to it. I said, I don't know. But I do know that in front of me is this word now, the transitional book of the dead. Just what is the transitional? So before us is the idea of the transitional book of the dead. And I sent an email around, and for whatever reason. And the idea is that you're in one space, and then you're in another space. And we talked about some of the spaces that, you know, you found yourself in when you first met EJ and things like that. And in these spaces, you notice suddenly you're in a different space.
Yes.
Right?
It occurs to you.
It occurs to you.
Mm-hmm.
And like right now, if you compare the space that you're in right now to the space that you were in an hour ago, or as you were driving here, or as you were getting to your computer, if you are, you'll notice it's a different space. For me, I am now forewarned to consider, what is the transitional? Can you begin to notice the transit itself? Are there attributes of transition? Because if you can get to a point where you're beginning to sense those, and this actually goes to one of the chapters in Practical Work on Self. I can't remember the chapter now, where you're noticing the movements of energy within the human biological machine. 12, the sensing chapter 12 or something like that. I can't remember. George might have the book out. But this is what I mean about transit. The obvious transit is you go from one room to another room. Generally, you go through a door of some sort. And we have the doorway exercise in Practical Work on Self, and the concept is to notice the transition. So all of that is just a preface, Pat, to what we're going to get into, but I just wanted to give credence, give voice. I wanted to give voice to the title of this chapter, which is the transitional book. Okay.
And now we're going to read it, is that correct?
It's a long one. I don't know if we want to read it.
Well, I'm going to read verse 1.
Good.
And David will read verse 42. There are 42 verses. No, I'm going to read verse 1, and then we're going to go through the transit to verse 42 without
intervening.
Reading.
Good point.
Yes.
Very well. Wow. See? Good one.
The transitional book of the dead, called the Book of Ul-Jabbar. 1. I am he whose will compels all, everyone, and everything, regardless of their individual natures.
42. And even the greatest sinner can remove all impureness by the power of humble prayer and purity and close the doors to the six worlds of material existence by gaining a complete understanding of the reality of the absolute truth of the Spirit.
That does it for tonight. We'll see you all next week.
Fill in the blanks.
So here's a suggestion for those of you who have the book in hand right now. If you look at the second Sunday sermon, which we did read about,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks ago or so, the first line says, during the moments of death, the practitioner occupies the place to which Jesus referred when he said to his disciples, ye are the salt of the earth, ye are the light of the world. Now, I present that paragraph in reference to this transitional book. Because it says three things immediately. One is, during the moments of death, so that's including time, sort of, and the place that the practitioner occupies is in reference to the one who is dying. And then it says Jesus is referring a statement to his disciples. So there's three reference point
right
there. And at the end of the Sunday sermon, I would like everybody, if they can, while we're, you know, looking around at stuff, take a look at the Sunday sermon reference to this. Because the last sentence says, of course, anyone who has had the training of this teaching wouldn't be surprised or shocked at this, because they have already transformed themselves into spirits. They have established their identity as spirit rather than as material man. And the last sentence
mm-hmm.
of 42 says,
beautiful,
understanding of the reality of the absolute truth of the Spirit. So all of the Sunday sermons refer to spirit. Almost in every single case, there's 18 Sunday sermons, and I don't think any of them don't reference spirit. So this is a place where the combination between the instruction in a sermon and the teaching matter, which to me is more like, you know, you get a new thing for Christmas, and you take it out of the box, and you look in the owner's manual, and you say, read the whole book before you use this machine. They all say that now. So you read through the book, and it tells you do's and don'ts, but it also tells you things that might be new things that you didn't know, but it repeats a lot that you thought you knew, but differently. And for me, when I read the books of the dead, that's an instruction manual. When I read the sermons, that's like do.
Mm-hmm.
The practical, do, do, do. So this is just one way of taking this transitional chapter, Book of the Dead, transitional book, and putting it in the context of what the rest of this Book of the Dead guidebook is about, which is the Sunday sermons. And I've said that before.
Uh-huh.
I think all the Sunday sermons directly reference the books, and the books reference the sermons. And that's an example of that for me.
There's a, in this paragraph 42 that we just read, and the instruction is, it's startlingly simple. The 41 chapter paragraphs between them,
mm-hmm.
it's like the battle of Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the all the things that you're going to face and fight with in terms of the six worlds.
Yes.
And the divine help that is there available. There's a wonderful phrase in the 24. He goes, and all the forms of the divine conclave.
Mm.
Huh? The divine I know, it's quite beautiful.
Yeah.
That's who's there to help you.
Yeah.
But we're natural human beings. We're regular individuals with great weaknesses and small strength, but some strength. And then the instruction, the last paragraph, is, well, okay, so you're not a big guy. Okay? You're
yes.
not one of the big guys that yes. we're just talking about.
Yes.
But it says, even the greatest sinner
yes.
can remove all, strange use of term, impureness.
Impureness. I caught that one because
yeah.
I was thinking impurities, but that's not what it says.
But I know, because that would be the common usage, and
yeah.
he pushes us to a different space. Then he goes, by the power of humble prayer. Now, our friend on the phone here, impurity. Okay? So what do you think he means by that? What's an example of that, Silver Dan?
Impureness.
Well, I'm asking him about...
Oh, impurity?
The power of humble prayer.
Oh, humble prayer. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I was lost for a moment.
And I might respond that I think of all impurities as falling under the category of unconsciousness. So if we're unconscious in any way, we have a tendency to do impure things. Of course, you know, there are some exaggerated examples of that, crime, for example, but just going about life without really thinking about it, living unconsciously, is a form of impurity. And this is what this 42 speaks to me about, is the ability to activate the essential self in such a way that it's the center of our gravity. In that case, we are pure because we're not unconscious. We are conscious of reality, which is centered in the spirit.
We've heard this in this particular school over and over again, what Silverdale is telling us, this idea that there's the machine and all of its glory and power,
yeah.
and then there's the essential self, but it only has two tools. It's hardly anything. It's got presence and attention. That's hardly anything. But this paragraph 42 is telling us that even the
yeah.
greatest of the sinners
yeah.
can remove impureness through whatever humble prayer, as long as it's coming through a form of purity. So all of this has to do with developing your sensing mechanism. Boy, and we have tried to define that in the practical work on self class on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough, and EJ referred to that over the weekend, actually. He said, how hard it is. If you know what it is, you know what it is. But trying to define it for somebody is really kind of hard to express it. Lisi Stricia keeps asking, well, what is it? And I've met her a couple of times now, and she does have presence, and she does, she's very skilled at sensing. And it's really a language thing in a certain way, because then once she came, she says, oh, it's that simple? It is simple. You get unidentified, and then that's what's there. There's just a simple spirit, as Molly Midway is telling us. Yeah.
Yeah, anything else that you can identify with. Exactly.
Like your name.
Like your name, yeah.
So we have these powerful tools available to us, and we think that the task is impossible, but that's not what it says.
No, it says very clearly.
It's possible.
It is possible to do, and it says what it is that you need to do. It doesn't exactly say in what manner can you do it, because by definition, a transition is fluid. It is not a static thing. It doesn't mean that any specific thing is going to always be what you apply. You may have to apply your presence in this case, your attention in this case, your will in this case. You do not have strict, if this occurs, do this. Situation transition is fluid. It's changeable. Now, can I throw it all out of balance here for a second? So, in looking for material for this evening, I told David this morning that my search, I was going to try and look at all the other issues of the Book of the Dead that I had copies of and find similar material to this transitional book in order to reference the fact that it has existed in the other texts, just not in this particular manner. And I could do that if I had spent the day doing it, but I did other things with my day. But I did pick up one of my favorite brown books. Now, the brown books are from an era of vellum bind and self-printing in the Institute. So this, you know, one of the rare books. And the early ADDs were printed in the brown vellum bound also, so it's on my shelf. This is not the ADD. This is the Manual for Natural Childbirth at Home by Sibel Gold. And the text in this book is about how to experience and use the situation of birthing a child for spiritual development. And in class two, it says, first stage labor, transition. Transition, passing from one stage to another. During transition, it is essential that you relax the body and empty your mind of everything but the breathing. Concentrate on controlling the breathing. Have your coach warn you when the contraction is about to start and do your cleansing breath. So the instructions on this page are to the birthing mother. Instructions on the second page are the coach's guide. That would be the practitioner, okay? The practitioner. Transition, first stage, advanced labor. Characteristics. Name the physical things that might occur. Snappy or irritable. Unsure. Feeling discouraged. What is happening? Description of the physical event. Key. Concentration, relaxation, so the two at the same time. What to do? One, verbalize the contractions. So now it's starting. We're about halfway over. So this reminded me of the instructions that were given to me to use for Claire when she was dying. Mm-hmm. And EJ said, have her describe to you what it's like for her wherever it is that she is. Ask her, what does it look like to you now? How does it seem to you now? So that the recall of the experience could be formulated, and therefore a little tiny piece of objectivity was allowed by delivering that information to the other, in this case, me. So the coaching guiding dynamic with either a dying person or a birthing person has to do with the functionality of how to move through the chamber. So I apply this back to our transitional book, and what it says, I hope I'm going to get exactly the right line. And you should not become afraid. Now, you should remain in the state of high indifference, and you should be in the mood of the man who saw his own body drifting in the river. And he stayed his hand, and he did not stop the body. He was not pulled into the river with the body.
Yeah.
You want to get the phone in your hand and speak it, and then everybody knows.
Okay, the green button, touch that.
Yeah, that's good.
Nishit is saying anyone can repeat this name of the book, and I'm assuming that he's referring to the red book, which is Conscious Birth, correct?
Oh, this book?
Yes.
This book is a manual which was used by the classes for natural childbirth in 1973 and 74. The book that you could purchase, which would be The Joyous Childbirth, You're asking me what?
Can you purchase it? Is it still in print?
There are used copies online rarely.
So did he want that one or the
red? Is that what he's for the...
I'll ask him. So the Joy of Conscious...
Joyous Childbirth.
Joyous, okay.
By Sibel Gold. And there was a imprint edition, meaning not published by Gateways, and another publisher in about 78 or 79, and I can't remember the name of the publisher now. It's, you know, close to Dell, that level of publishing house. Imprint.
Smaller paperback.
Yeah. Imprint copy. But they can check Joyous Childbirth, author Sibel Gold, C-Y-B-E-L.
Okay. Not Sibel and E-J, just Sibel Gold? Sibel Gold.
Imprint copy was only Sibel, yeah.
Okay.
Type that into the chat.
Thank you. Good question. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he said exactly. Thank you.
Right. You're welcome.
Good.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I want to point out that Pat's making very interesting. So here she is. I'm assuming this was you went through some of this material when you were in childbirth.
I assisted Sibel in writing this text, and I taught the class until I had. when you have early childbirth and then you deliver unexpectedly twins.
That's called wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, I use this material.
That's the red button.
I use this material. It is directly related. These two bits of information were being
developed
simultaneously.
But here's what I wanted to say about it. That when you're in the experience that is being described there, there's an absolute sense of aloneness, that you are by yourself, because it's such a dramatic experience, you can see no one else can get it. And then suddenly somebody is reading to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody is with you.
And then you know somebody is with you at that point. And one of the things that we've stressed in the ABD class and now in the guidebook class is to take the opportunity to be read to. We did that a few weeks ago. Pat and I read to each other to demonstrate what it's like. But now we're not talking about the intellectual understanding of this material, but the impact on you of being read to. Didn't you do that with Susan Kester? You and
Sacramento?
Yeah. You read the whole book to yourself, and then what's happening there, can't quite conceive of the death transit experience from where we are. We can intellectualize it, and there's articles now having a good death and all this stuff, but the impact of it is described very clearly in this material.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular transitional book where all of these guides come out and all of the power of the six worlds come out, you can see this is what you're going to get hit with. And everybody says practice.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody says that. And you hear and you go, oh, yeah, well, we got a good idea. Then it's done. Right here at the line 42, it says, with humble prayer, even humble prayer with purity. That's the answer. So if you're a videographer or a graphics designer or a musician or a labyrinth reader, you bring forth a certain sense of presence when you're doing it because you're, in a sense, delivering a reading right then.
In the same way that when you have the opportunity to attend one of the workshops with EJ, whether it's online or in person, and you have that experience of being not just included in the event, not just the experience of participating in that moment, but something spreads a little past that moment. You step a little bit outside of yourself in that moment, and there's a little bit more available for you, and you actually have more that you can offer. In that way, this text offers that opportunity to extend a little bit, like what you're talking about, the doorways exercise or the moving from chamber to chamber or room to room. And in some ways, all of the material, especially the text you speak of, the HBM and the PLOS, all of the materials that are referenced later on in here's an exercise, do it this way, here's a daily practice, orb runs, etc. All of those come from this basic stance, which is there is the capacity for the human biological machine to be set aside under some conditions to allow being to be present, and therefore in that space you can proceed with your practice, which is not for the machine's sake. And that's always the discovery of what does this mean? Because it says, verse 30, and you should not become afraid. Are you kidding me? You just named all the things I am afraid of. What does that mean?
So mostly we're afraid. Mostly we go through life and we're afraid. Truly, we're afraid.
Phone. Yeah.
I was being reminded of the help that the being is receiving when being told the example of look at the body in the river.
Yeah.
It's okay to let it go. And so it's really the machine that is afraid, right? Not the spirit, not the real I.
Yeah.
So that's what we have. That's the battle, in a sense, that's discussed in this particular book.
Yeah, exactly.
Is who's going to win? You know, is it the brilliant lights of clarity and purity and cleansing, or the soft lights that are the release and the refuge? Those are the things. And the answer is in the power of humble prayer in purity. So when you feel afraid, first of all, you have to get a sense of what does it mean when you're afraid. You have to know, are you afraid? Do you become afraid? I happen to know the answer is yes. And I know that for myself, I'm afraid a lot of the time. What do you do with it is the question.
Yep.
What do you do with it? The machine is afraid. Because it's afraid of its body being floating down the river.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the next sentence says, now you should remain in a state of high indifference, which is a terrifically calming and peaceful statement, and extremely difficult to put into action when you're in a state of fear and panic and terror and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that is the instruction. Now, you should be in a state of high indifference. Not just indifference, high indifference.
An example of high indifference would be you know that you are in objectivity. You know that. There's a certainty of that. All this is going around. I read a story about it was an Indian guru who was on his deathbed. And, the devotees were around him and they knew he was dying. He had a physical ailment of some cancer of some sort. And he was just beatific. Right. I mean, he was dying, his body was collapsing and all of that. And for some reason, one of the devotees lifted up the blanket that was covering him and noticed that there was severe bleeding in his shoulder area. And the guru wasn't even noticing it. That's high indifference. He had moved past that because he was done with the body and he was able to stand there. So the principle is that we're given these concepts. Now we must go forth with humble prayer and purity, practicing them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the text, Angel's Healing Journey, is a version of the teaching in the American Book of the Dead. I don't think you've worked this text,
no.
Right? So when somebody looks at this material, they usually look at it for the healing aspect of it, and of course there's the instructions for which chambers you would read for which illnesses. It's quite precise, quite lovely. But there is on page 2 a section called transition. As I pass from the organic form of ego into the consciousness of the void, I release myself from the duty to maintain the organic ego. I hear a voice as deep as a thousand rolling thunders. And the voice is not one voice, but the voice of voices of many. Hear, O bornless one, the key of the moment of passage, the vision of absolute truth. Passing from the phenomenal world of organic life, I am reborn in the non-phenomenal world, in which the primal elements of the organic ego separate into their pure forms, appearing as phenomena and hallucination. Which is granted, bless you, the power of voluntary passage at the moment of expulsion in the organic world, and at every moment of transition afterward. I don't ever recall hearing that said before. I recognize myself to be the central force of the shimmering, endless void of the non-phenomenal world. I am transformed and eternal. The bonds of the organic ego and the distractions and necessities of organic life are broken as I awaken in the clear light with the liberation of consciousness. Now this page, transition, as far as I know, does not occur in any of the other texts. I have never seen it in any of the other texts. It's only in this one.
Don't lose your place.
Yeah.
So what was the phrase about the ego?
I release myself from the duty to maintain the organic ego.
Wow.
And I especially like this one. It says, unto each is granted power of voluntary passage at the moment of expulsion from the organic world and at every moment of transition afterward. So the whole passage in the non-phenomenal world has in itself the opportunity for voluntary passage. You like that?
There was a theme that was running through part of the workshop, and the theme was to have a purpose or a goal, a multiple lifetime purpose.
Yeah.
Remember this? I was talking about it. And the way that it was demonstrated was that they demonstrated through the plane of B2, Diablo 2.
Mm-hmm.
And what people had to do was take a level 1 character and go to a particular waypoint that was quite complicated to do, very difficult to do. And you would die along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You would just die because you didn't have any weapons, you had no skills. In fact, you weren't even supposed to engage the monsters. You're supposed to get to your goal. So I don't know how many times, do you remember how many times you died during that? Yeah, you weren't there for that one. but, you know, 50 times maybe.
Mm.
So the goal was, let's say, actually the goal was to get to the inner cloister waypoint. Whole planes, you can get to it. You can, but to go through the underground passage, get through that and actually come out, go, and so on and so forth, very difficult. So it was a tangible example of you would die and you'd spawn, you'd resurrect,
right,
and continue on your quest.
Mm-hmm.
And you would know, particularly if you're a newbie, even if you're not a newbie, quite frankly, you would learn how to do it better the next time, and better the next time. I mean, some of the really great players that were out there, like Fred and Lena and Nortiana, you know, they did it,
yeah,
and they would post their results.
Yeah.
But they died many, 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 many times. That's what this was.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you were not supposed to retrieve,
yeah,
your body. You continued doing that. So what if that was the case with this particular lifetime? So there's a reason to maintain your ego because there's something you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a duty.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't know what that is, but you keep the lifetime going, maybe you'll understand it. EJ once said to Claude and I, we were sitting there, just the three of us in the dining room, and he said, in all sincerity, he said, I'm surprised that you two chose not to remember your past lives.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of your technique. I mean, you know, and so if you begin with the principle that some of this, that reincarnation is true or whatever it is, and I know not everybody does, you begin to wonder, are you getting closer to the waypoint? Well, even at this late age, I mean, some of us ancient of days people like myself, you know, you start to wonder, maybe I had a goal. And, you know, after 40-some years, 50 years, you start going, maybe I had a goal.
I want to ask George something about this. You there, Cheryl Dale?
I am.
You is. When you look at the word impurities and you see it in relation to basically unconsciousness or sleep, do you see an antidote in that paragraph, that's the verse 42?
Well, I certainly do in my personal explorations. It's actually very simple, but
yes, it's, so, and speak about
so,
it.
So really, what the anecdote to unconsciousness is?
Not
is
the anecdote.
Yeah, no, that, yeah, not anecdote, but antidote. But anyway, the antidote to unconsciousness is simply the awareness that the totality of our historical personality, which has a job to maintain itself in the course of ordinary existence, has to be persuaded that it can actually facilitate the development of the spirit, and in so doing, And in so doing, actually, the impurities of unconsciousness begin to drop away by virtue of the fact that it's being displaced by the consciousness of the essential self. So anyway, impurities, yep, just have to pacify the totality of the organic existence in order to facilitate the manifestation of the spirit. That's all it really boils down to.
So each of us have to find our ways and means to develop the simple, humble prayer in purity.
Yeah, and what I have also found of great interest is, and I'm indebted to Gurdjieff for this idea, our spirit and our organic existence function simultaneously and incessantly. And that's of great importance to know, because as we begin to pacify as we begin to pacify our organic existence, that spirit, which is functioning right now, begins to become stronger, and the result is a personal sense of manifestation and experience. That's the way I think it works.
Yeah, so if we do it, it becomes apparent that it's there.
Unquestionably, yeah.
You get evidence.
Beginning to get evidence that it's there, and then you get the startling impact that it's real for you.
That's right, and particularly for people like ourselves, you know, people who have been pursuing this for a number of years, you know, and in the beginning we're basically hysterical because we're trying to achieve something that we don't know quite what its nature is or if it's even possible. But as the years roll by, our spirit actually does gradually liberate itself. We do it just normally in the process of maturing and ripening, begin to gradually be less personally aggressive and destructive, and that facilitates, of course, the growth of the spirit. You're just displacing one cup of tea with another cup of tea, really.
So we don't know. Once you begin to really sense that you are spirit, you are essential self as well, not I had this experience with these other individuals.
No, that's right. Your personal identity becomes one of I'm a spirit manifesting in a physical body, instead of what we're doing right now, what most of us do in the course of our pursuit of spiritual matters is we think of ourselves as an organic body attempting to become a spirit. But once these impurities are gone, are done with, then what we start saying is, "Oh, I'm a spirit that just happens to be manifesting in this body." And then that, of course, reorients everything. A little light can change change everything.
It's startling to begin to own that yourself.
Yeah.
As small as it might be, to own it yourself.
Yeah.
Of a new life.
Now, before we take that comment or question, I just want to say in response to what Silverdale is offering and what David is confirming is the naming of this chapter, the transitional book, yes, and the not numbering it. It does not have book 9. It does not have the number attached to it. And it's called the transitional book. To me, this transitional book could occur between any of the books that are here, that it has no particular location that's required. The reason why it's offered in this context right here is because at this point, what we've been through so far through book 8 has described all of the components that will now proceed through the rest of the journey, through the voyage, through the macro dimensions. So all of the components are listed and expressed in book transitional.
Yeah.
But it
sure
could occur anywhere. So what George was just offering was this recognition of spiritness and ego-ness as components simultaneously is this same thing here. It's not going to be any specific book or event. It can be in between those. It can be halfway here, halfway there.
Hmm.
It's not defined. It is not defined. That's the tricky thing with that. That's, you said that this morning when you told me what the names were in the list of the 99 names of God. What are the two qualities that you named for this, for this name?
The compeller is one.
One of them, yes. Let's get it.
The witness is another.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, go for it.
So a comment by Grocki. Just by regular dictionary definition, impure means alloyed, and pure means unalloyed, one. Seems this paragraph is pointing to an awareness of the reality of the absolute truth of the spirit. Example, a oneness or sense of oneness with everything.
Well, that's very helpful, very, very helpful, because we are the impurity then from a technical point of view in a certain way, George, is that when the two are blended together and you can't even see them as separate, it's just a bundle of alloy.
Well, the way I'm formulating this in my experiences is that not unlike having a left hand and a right hand or two eyes or two ears that provide balance, our spirit perceives the unity of everything existing as well as itself as a part of the unity of everything existing. It feels everything in a unified sense, whereas the other hand, that is our organic existence, is intended to juggle multiplicity and diversity. So we have a combination, we have a squaring of the circle, really, because on the one hand, we live a sequential life with our organic sense of multiplicity and diversity, but by developing our other hand, that is our spirit, we become aware of, hey, we have a spirit which senses itself as a part of the unity of everything existing. Now, developing that awareness within ourselves is really what our work efforts are directed toward.
I know that from time to time on Sunday at the practical work on self, I ask the question, do you feel that you are spirit?
Mm.
Can you sense your essential self? And I ask it not because I think that they don't or do or don't. It's just that you keep recalling it and it becomes a tangible, real product for you. And then your fundamental viewpoint of all of life begins to change because you're living from a different ground, you're on a different set of cement, and that's what this particular transitional book, it's the battle of the divine conclave against the practitioners of the six worlds.
Mm-hmm.
That's what comes through here. And as we go forward into nine and the rest of the books, which we'll zip through in a certain way, we're going to be in a different zone.
Yeah. We have, as if we come back to the analogy that we've been using, the journey that we've been making as a group, and, you know, we've got our guides out there, and they come back to the group, and we sort of, we're making our map, and we're proceeding here. When we have come to this place in our expedition, we have actually invested fully in, what skills do we need in order to accomplish this? What tools and materials and supplies do we need in order to make a successful journey? And who can transit along with us through the remaining stages? Because not everybody makes the full expedition with you. You start out, you have stages. You even have those who are meeting you along the trail and say, hey, I'll bring you those supplies, you know, in Fort Lewis. and I'll meet you there, you know, on the 23rd of December, 1872.
Mm-hmm.
And by golly, there they are with all the supplies that you need to proceed across the Great Plains. So, 1872, right. So, and don't ask me what I was doing then because I'll tell you. And what we want to do now when we've come through our transitional book, Ul Jabbar, is we want to look at the next remaining passages as how they could be personally experienced in the current context of our own life practice. Oh, we have a question.
Being that numberless transition can occur at any point, doesn't that mean that it's always a transition?
Yes, just like it is now and always has been and always will be, this is the clear light. What is your recognition of that? What is your relationship to that? How are you experiencing that at this breath? So yes, the transitional chapter is always part of the book, and that's one of the reasons why when we read these books and we're reading linearly, that's what our brain does. It goes across the page like this, and then we have to step it further than that. We have to take the text further than here. It has to get expressed and interned, you know, aligned somewhere. So yes, the answer is of course it is always there. All 99 names of God are all true, all at the same time.
All the time.
Always.
But they're not all...
But they're not all showing at the same
evident
time.
For a particular individual. So we have to discover what strengths and weaknesses each of us have, because then we'll develop the tools from our strengths to overcome the weaknesses. And a great way to learn that is to allow yourself to be read to.
Being read to is an experience that is not like any other experience.
We'll do it again. Pat and I will do it again in the next coming weeks to demonstrate it. Mm-hmm. It's worth doing because you get to, it puts you in a place of mentation where you can see it directly. You can see and understand this material directly. It's real for you. That's what I wish and hope for all of us,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we'll bring forward as we go forth in the coming weeks. But for right now, are we okay?
I'm checking.
How are we doing? Let's go. Please.
Put it on and let's hear them.
So Grocki says, similarly, the word individuality, contrary to its everyday connotation, actually means undivided, one. Seems as long as we are identifying ourselves as a separate self is what causes impurities, because then by definition we have a separate personal agenda from the universal agenda.
Good. Thank you.
Nice and clean. Thank you, Grocki.
This is a practicum. These Wednesday night adventures are practicums. We're taking, you know, very... Gossamer information.
Yeah.
And we're bringing it in as tools we get to work with every day as we go through the day. So, thank you for coming. We'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7.
Yes.
Thanks for hosting us.
Yes.
Thank you
for your help this evening again.
Thank you, Tito.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.